ministry here, and it's just a blessing to finally be here. And so this morning we're going to talk about design in nature. Design in nature. So if you saw these two objects lying on the road somewhere, you might think, well, you know, on the left-hand side, we would definitely say that that was a designed object, all right, that watch. Now, the right-hand side, you'd say, well, maybe not. So that's an Aboriginal stone axe. So we used to take mission teams to Australia from Bob Jones University. Did that for 23 summers. And I terribly offended an Aboriginal brother. As I said, it looked like a rock to me. He was assuring me that that was a finely crafted object. But you can understand how I think that maybe it was just a rock. What I'm going to talk about today is that the Earth and the solar system and what God has made looks more like the watch than it does like the Aboriginal stone axe. We take it for granted we have the ability to tell the difference between designed objects and objects that lack intelligent design. If the Earth itself looks and acts like a precision machine, then we can know it was designed by intelligence and did not arise by chance. So Isaiah 45, verse 18 says, "For thus saith the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it. He hath established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord, and there is none else." He had a purpose in it. And the purpose of his creation is so that life could survive and thrive on the surface of this planet. Now think about the way in which this earth resembles a precision machine. So here's a chart of global... It's not up there? Oh. Okay. 2 minutes. Okay. Okay, 2 minutes to go. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. Okay. So I taught chemistry and physics at Bob Jones University for 39 years, and then 5 years ago retired from the classroom. And we've been on the road ever since as a Bob Jones University science ambassador. And we've been everywhere. We've been out to the West Coast and down the Rio Grande Valley and Florida and New England. And we've had a great time at it. So this is our fifth year to travel that way. Saw some of you up at Camp Rapidan. Enjoyed our time up there with you as well. And I thought if I'd known how much fun this was going to be, I would have quit my job sooner, okay, because this has been great. So what motivates us to travel? Well, I'm concerned about false ideas out there. You may have heard of BioLogos and this idea that, you know, they believe that God used evolution to create, and they're producing Sunday school material. They got grants from the Templeton Foundation to convince Sunday school children that Adam and Eve were not real people. And so that's out there. And so I wanted to combat that. And then I'm interested in talking to young people about going to a Christian school for science and engineering. And what we hear sometimes from young people is, you know, or for their parents, is they say, well, we put them into, you know, a Christian school like your school here, or we homeschooled them, and you know, we're going to send them to a real, you know, to like the state school so they can get real science. So I used to have a full head of hair, and that's why I tore it all out, but they used to say things like that, okay? And so this, you know, I want to let them know that they have this option of go to a school like Bob Jones University and get a fine science and engineering education. In fact, this past year, our engineering class increased by 40%. Okay, so these are majors that are much sought after. So we're going to let it know about that. So that's part of why we're on the road. And then I find people have questions about the Bible and science. And so you may have questions. And that, you know, sometimes the pastor doesn't feel like he has the background to answer those. So if you have questions, go ahead and write them on a piece of paper. And give them to me before we leave, or give them to the pastor. I'm sure he'll pass them along to me. And we'll try to get to those this evening after the moon message. So we're talking about the moon, God's signpost in the sky. How are we doing? We got there. We're there. Yay. All right. Just about every church I go into, the prince of the power of the internet gets into the wires somehow. I don't know how that works. We can try everything out ahead of time, the night before and everything, and then when it's ready, time to go, something happens. So we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Okay. All right. So here's our watch and our Aboriginal stone axe. And there's Isaiah 45:18. Now, so this is a chart of temperature anomalies going back 100 years. And what you'll notice here, now, this is really hard to come up with. You know, they have to average all the temperatures from everywhere in the world, you know, in the ocean, the land, the atmosphere, and so forth. And this is really hard to do, you can imagine. But this is our best shot at it. Okay, so what you should notice there is that we've had about 1 degree Celsius change in the last 100 years. Nobody reacted. How come nobody reacted? Only 1 degree Celsius change in the last 100 years. Isn't that amazing? I mean, we're not even talking about the original design. This is a sin-cursed world. And think about all the things that will happen in the last 100 years as far as, you know, transportation and fossil fuel burning and all that type of thing. How come we only had 1 degree change in the last 100 years? That's absolutely amazing. I would suggest, I told folks this morning I wasn't going to talk about politics. This is not exactly politics, but I would suggest, instead of getting into a political argument with people about global warming, maybe you should point him to an all-wise creator God who created this world in such a way that there's only about a 1 degree change in the last 100 years. Maybe that would be better than getting it wrangling about the political aspects of it. I think so. So how's that possible? What are all the energy inputs and outputs that God had to balance for there to only be 1 degree change in the last 100 years? Well, the Earth is the only planet circling our sun, which life, as we know, could and does exist. If the Earth had a little different mass or it traveled a little faster or slower around the sun, all life would cease to exist. And the orbit of the Earth around the sun is almost perfectly circular. We say it has an eccentricity of 1.7%, which is really very minimal, almost perfect circle. And so there's an extremely narrow range of possible temperatures and pressures and atmospheric composition that must exist in order to sustain life as we know it. And if the Earth rotated, you know, on its axis much slower, all life would cease to exist because it would freeze at night and burn up during the daytime. Genesis 1:31, God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. Now, I was in the church talking about that, and this guy was there, and he was a follower. He was a progressive creationist follower of Hugh Ross. And he said, see, it only says very good. It didn't say it was perfect. No, you don't understand. The word here actually means it accomplished what God intended it to do. All right? It's complete. All right? And so it includes the idea of perfection as well. It was flawless in beauty and function and purpose and in potential. Of course, we know something happened and threw things out of kilter. But even then, even with the curse, it's operating pretty well, okay, if not perfectly. So we're going to have a test on this after Sunday school. You're going to have to come up with all these numbers. And my wife doesn't like this chart because it's too busy. I chose it for that purpose, because it looks complicated. Because it is complicated. Okay? So if you add up numbers there, you'll see that of all the energy coming into the Earth, about 30% comes from incoming radiation. About 19% is absorbed by the atmosphere. And then another 51% is absorbed by the land and water. And yet of all the energy that our Earth receives, we only get 0.45 billionth of that energy. 0.45 billionth. Now you say, well, how's that possible? How come such a low amount? Well, the sun is 93 million miles away, which is a good place for it. You know, good place for a fusion reactor as far away from me as possible. Okay? So we only get a tiny, tiny fraction of that energy from the sun, yet we get exactly the right amount. so that life can be sustained on this planet. Now, we don't see this kind of energy balance on other planets. So I suppose in your devotions this morning, you thanked the Lord for Jupiter, did you? Thank the Lord for Jupiter this morning? You didn't do that. Okay, well, Jupiter keeps big rocks from outer space from hitting you. You should be thankful for that. And there's a lot of things about Jupiter, and we're going to talk about during the morning service. We're going to talk about how Jupiter shows that the Earth is young. But anyway, getting past that, Jupiter puts out like twice as much energy as it takes in from the Sun. How does it do that? Well, obviously, it couldn't do that over billions of years. It can only be young. It's still cooling down from the original creation. We'll talk more about that later. And we see the same thing with Saturn. We see the same thing with Neptune. All these planets put out more heat than they take in from the Sun. It's on Earth that we have this energy balance that God has designed. And that energy balance, of course, drives the hydrological cycle and all the things here on Earth. We also have decay of radioactive elements in the Earth's crust. So we think about half of the heat that we have in the center of the Earth comes from the original creation. About half comes from the decay of radioactive elements. That has to be balanced as well. We're talking about large amounts of energy there. And then we have the conversion of gravitational energy to thermal energy. And one way, of course, is through cosmic dust. There are 5,200 megatons of cosmic dust raining down on the Earth every year. Now, you're converting all that potential energy into kinetic energy. But one way in which we see potential energy turned into kinetic energy is through the tides. We're used to the idea about the tides going up and down twice a day. Just the waves crashing on the rocks on the sides of the continents, is like setting off like 16 atomic bombs every day, okay? There's this terrific amount of energy that's released. But what you don't consider is the Earth is going up and down, too. The rocks are grinding against each other and producing energy. And I wanted to do a demonstration here just to fix that in your mind and show you some energy from friction. So here I have a couple rusty cannonballs, or I call them thermite balls. Rusted them in my motel room. Thank you. And so I put some aluminum foil around here and see if we can get some energy out of here and that you can see. So watch. Okay. So you see I've melted some holes in my aluminum foil here, but that was just done with friction, okay? So when you think about the energy released by friction, maybe that'll come to mind. Doing some of the demonstrations we're doing in the school this week, and I find that the adults like to see some of them as well, so that's why we brought some along with us. Okay, so we have that. We have that energy from the friction of the rocks grinding against each other. And you'd think that, with all that tidal force on there, you'd think that the Earth would be slowing down, that the rotation of the Earth, the day would be getting longer, right, because the moon's pulling on it all the time. And yet, the length of the Earth day is increased by only 0.002 seconds per century. 0.002 seconds per century. Does that sound more like the rock or the watch? Okay, it sounds more like the watch to me. Pretty good watch at that. So how's that possible? How's it possible that we only have 0.002 seconds per century added to the length of an Earth day? Well, it's because it's not just the Earth and the Moon. The Earth and the Moon actually gain energy from the outer planets, like Jupiter and Saturn, these other planets. They actually add energy to the Earth-Moon system and stabilize it. Okay. Now tonight, we're going to talk about the Moon and what it does and how God created it and so forth, and I think you'll find that to be very interesting. But that's one of the things that it does. It stabilizes the Earth. And then we have the enormous capacity of the Earth's oceans to store thermal energy. Of all the common liquids we know of, water can store more energy than just about any other liquid we know of. And we say it has a high heat capacity. So I want to demonstrate that. So I have a solution of isopropyl alcohol and salt water here. And I have a cotton rag in here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to set this rag on fire. And don't worry about the smoke detectors because there won't be any smoke. This is kind of like Moses' non-burning bush. Isn't that the way you teach it around here, Moses' non-burning? That's right. So this is my non-burning rag. So the alcohol burns, but the water keeps the rag cool, keeps it from burning. That's why there's no smoke. My wife's pickpocketing me while I'm helpless here. She's good at that.
Try to hold everything at the same time. Am I on? I can hold it. It's not even that hot. Okay. And this rag's made out of cloth. The reason I picked this pocket is there's something in here that's made out of cloth, and it's green. Should we try to set some money on fire? The kids go crazy when we do this in the school.
I had a guy in one church, he said, that's nothing, my wife can get rid of money without even using fire. So he thought that was...
A one? Now, where's your faith? Hey, there's something back here still. I didn't know this. It's a 50.
It's a miracle. There's still a 50 in my wallet. She hasn't spent it at Potomac Mills. All right. So here we go. So this is American money is made of cloth, essentially, and high rag content paper. We put it in here, it absorbs the water, and then I set it on fire. And the water keeps it from burning. It's just a little cleaner than it was. Okay, there's no COVID on here or anything. So we call this money laundering.
Of course, you all know that I wouldn't have given him that $50 bill if I wasn't positive what was going to happen, right? So all those years that we went to Australia, we would only ever do American money because we knew it would happen. Well, scientists are curious people, right? I'm sure there's some scientists out here in the audience, and the wives will attest to the fact that their husbands are curious. They want to know what's going to happen without even asking our opinion. So Dr. Masco decided one year to try Australian money. He didn't say anything to me, or I would have suggested, not knowing what was going to happen, that you use the smallest bill, right?
You would have just told me not to do it.
No, I would. Anyway, so Australian money, here's some really pretty Australian money. Every bill is a different color and a different size. However, it's not made out of cloth. Can you tell? It's made out of plastic. And that's why I won't do a $100 bill, by the way, because there's something down the middle now that's made out of plastic. And I know what happens because Dr. Masco set some Australian money on fire, and it melts. And he didn't use the smallest bill. He used a 50. And he came to me and showed me what happened, and I was like, $50?
She always tells people she was speechless, but she wasn't.
Well, We were mission team leaders, so I did try, my best to have a good response. But then I thought, in America, if you have a bad bill, because our bills wear out, they get holes and, tear, you just go to the bank and trade it. They just give you a new one. So I said, okay, on the way, we were leaving the very next morning early to come back to America. On our way back to the missionary's house, I said, stop, I'll go in. And I was pretty sure they would trade it, trade me. What do you think the first question was the teller asked? That's an American question. The Australian question was, do you have a bank account here? And of course I didn't. And 15 minutes later, I walked back out with my melted $50 bill. And we went home, though, and told the missionaries. And they said, well, we have a bank account. Maybe we can get it traded. Well, we were back in America 3 weeks later, found out, sure enough, they did get a brand new $50 bill. Now, you see, I like that story because, first of all, the Lord knew they needed $50. And we didn't know that, and that was the Lord's way of having us give them $50. $50 10 years ago was worth a whole lot more than it is now. But anyway, the second reason is because it leads into the next demonstration really, really well. He is going to... Oh, I want the tray under here. Can you pick that up?
Sure.
Thank you. He's going to set me on fire now to get back at him for telling that story. Hey, Pastor, come on up.
You've been praying for your pastor to have his to be on fire for years. Now we're going to answer your prayers.
Does it matter which hand?
No, okay. No. Now whichever one you don't need.
All right.
Now I'm going to do it first. I guess I'm off again. I'm going to do it first, and so he knows.
It's dangerous. You go first.
And okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my hand. In case there's any people that will be in the school, this is one of the things that we do in school, okay? You take your hand, you open it up, and you put it all the way to the bottom so it goes about 3 inches up there so it gets any hair on your arm.
Baptizes.
Wet. Yeah, otherwise.
Yeah, baptizo.
Burnt hair smells, doesn't smell very good. And then you make a little scoop out of your hand. You scoop off the top. You don't go in the water over here. And then you hold it back.
Flat. See how flat my hand
is? It's not tucked. It's not going down. It's
perfectly parallel.
What are you doing?
Can you use that one on me?
Okay. Time to set the pastor on fire.
Yeah, all right. I got to go back to the old one.
Here we go.
I did like you all. This is workman's comp.
Okay, give the pastor a hand. All right, it gives you a little preview of what we'll be doing in the school. All right, what else did God do? Well, these numbers. These are all numbers I used to teach when I taught chemistry and physics at Bob Jones. And they're all really long numbers. Okay, and so that means we know them to great precision. And what we find is that if you change them by even a small amount, life ceases to exist on the earth. They all have to be exactly what they are, or life would cease to exist. They're actually woven into the fabric of space-time. And so, where did those numbers come from? You know, how did they evolve? They never talk about that. They never talk about where those numbers came from. And so that's part of the story as well, that God made those numbers exactly what... Now, they'll say, well, we live in an infinite number of universes, and we just happen to live in a universe where everything is just fine-tuned for life. Well, that's not science. Okay, it's not even good science fiction. Okay, it's just they're just grasping at straws. They have no answer for where those numbers come from. Well, this is water. Of course, we've talked about water a little bit, and water, I call it a miracle chemical. Some people get really excited to see a phase diagram in church, and especially if you're an engineer, I know you're getting excited right now. Psalm 24. Verses 1 and 2 says, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. For he hath founded it upon the seas and established it upon the floods. So water is kind of like the primeval material that God used to create the world. It has, you know, really special properties. One of those, the space diagram shows, is that ice floats. Okay? That is, the solid phase is less dense than the liquid phase. And that's really important. Up north where it gets really cold, where the lakes and rivers freeze, if water was like every other chemical we know of, then all the lakes and rivers and ponds would freeze from the bottom up and would kill all the fish. You'd have fishicles. But God created it so it forms an insulating layer of ice over top and keeps the fish alive. God cares about the fish as well. So that's a very unusual property. And this week in school, we'll be talking about more unusual, miraculous properties that God actually built into the water molecule. I'd like to read that book. If you ever find that, How the Water Molecule Evolved, I'd like to find that book sometime. If you ever find that, let me know. Okay. We also have the greenhouse effect. The greenhouse effect has to be balanced. So greenhouse effect gets bad press, I know. But without the greenhouse effect, the Earth would be too cold, the average temperature would be below freezing, and life could not exist. We have to have some of that heat trapped in the Earth's atmosphere. So when I was teaching at Bob Jones, I had a student from Guam, and I was walking on campus one day on a hot afternoon, and I found her in a parked car with all the windows rolled up. And I tapped on the window and said, what are you doing? It must be 140 degrees in there. She said, oh, Dr. Matsko, I was so homesick for Guam. She said, I got in this parked car and rolled the windows up so it would feel like home. And I thought, I don't want to live in Guam. But it's like the greenhouse effect. And then you have air currents. So here's a little bit of scientific foreknowledge God revealed to Solomon about the wind currents. Long before, it took us till the 19th century before we figured this all out. Remember that the Bible's ahead of science in many cases, and in all cases, actually. Ecclesiastes 1:6, the wind goeth toward the south, turneth about unto the north, whirleth about continually, the wind returneth again according to his circuits. So it mixes in the hotter air near the surface with the colder air aloft by means of convection. Not only stabilizes the temperature, but also distributes oxygen and carbon dioxide. And then you have the dynamic balance of the earth, of the solar system. So Jeremiah 10:12 says, he hath made the earth by his power. He has established the world by his wisdom, has stretched out the heavens by his discretion. Think about how long it takes for the earth to go around the sun. It takes 365 days, 6 hours, 9 minutes, 9.54 seconds to go around the sun. Right now, we're traveling, the earth is traveling at 66,600 miles per hour as we hurtle through space around the sun. Do you feel it? Feel it? No, you don't feel it. Okay. And how much does that round trip vary from year to year? And the answer is by less than a hundredth of a second. Okay. Think about that precision that God built into it. And the tilt of the earth averages 23.5 degrees. And we're going to see this evening, we talk about the moon. The moon stabilizes the tilt of the earth. If the earth was straight up and down, then all the water would freeze at the poles, the north and south pole, and you'd have a big desert in between. Again, life couldn't live here. So that tilt is a big part of what is going on here. Then those outer planets like Jupiter and Saturn and Neptune and those, they stabilize the inner planets and keeps that tilt stable, the Earth-Moon system stable. If the moon was just a little bit closer, as we'll see this evening, then the tides would go up over the land twice a day. You'd be sweeping over every day. That wouldn't be very good for life on the Earth. Well, we see in Isaiah 45:12, it says, Lord says, I have made the earth and created man upon it. I, even my hands, have stretched out the heavens, and all their hosts have I commanded. Well, there are three questions that are raised by this precision of the earth and the solar system. First is this one. How is it, as one author noted, the entire universe is so fantastically hospitable to life? The laws of nature themselves seem to be suited for the requirements of life. So George Wald was a Harvard, a scientist, Nobel Prize winner. He said, how did it happen that with what seemed to be so many other options, our universe came out just as it did? From our own self-centered point of view, that's the best way to make a universe. How indeed? Secondly, if evolution works to evolve life to fit existing environments, why hasn't it equally conquered all the environments here and elsewhere? Think about the fact in the several thousand miles of changing environments from the center of the Earth to the beginning of outer space. It's really this very thin crust around the Earth where it's habitable, where life can survive. If evolution is true, why hasn't evolution fit organisms to the other places as well? And they have no answer, of course. Well, we know that the earth is given to us. In Psalm 115, 16, even the heavens are the Lord's. But the earth has he given to the children of men. So if we wanted to go to other planets, or to the moon or whatever, or down to the bottom of the ocean, we have to take part of that earth with us, okay? And we'll talk more about that during the 10 o'clock service. So is it naive for me to argue that just because the universe is hospitable to life, it was designed to harbor life? Isn't that like arguing like a flea believing that a dog's back was designed to harbor fleas? In fact, a flea is remarkably adapted to living on a dog in an incredibly complex way. So just like that, fleas only its habitat is on the skin of a habitable animal. Our only habitat is on the surface of the earth, unless we carry parts of it with us into space or to the bottom of the ocean. So the flea, like many other symbiotic systems, is actually an excellent argument for design. Which came first, the dog or the flea? I'll let you think about that for a while. So let's consider what this precision design of nature teaches us about God and his creation from Psalm 148. So praise ye the Lord, praise ye the Lord from the heavens, praise him in the heights. So everything in the atmosphere and above the atmosphere in space was created in such a way as to bring praise to God. Praise ye him, all his angels, praise ye him, all his host. So there are creatures that inhabit a dimension different than ours. We call them angels. And there's probably some here today. We have no awareness of them, but they fit their environment just like we fit our environment. Praise ye him, sun and moon. Praise ye him, all ye stars of light. So the heavenly bodies, as we see, moving in their mathematically precise orbits to demonstrate the Creator's genius. Praise ye him, ye heaven of heavens, and ye waters that be above the heavens. In Genesis 1:7, we see that God separated from the waters that were below the firmament, from the waters that were above the firmament. What's the firmament? Just the sky and outer space. And so maybe that's what it's speaking of here, is that separation of the waters from below, separation of waters above. People ask me, well, where's the waters above? Well, some creation scientists think it's actually at the edge of the universe, that the whole universe is in a big bubble of water. Others think that it's just the water in outer space. I don't know, but certainly he did that back in Genesis. Let them praise the name of the Lord, for he commanded, and they were created. He's to be praised because he's able to speak the world into existence. He didn't require billions of years of trial and error to get it right. He has also established them forever and ever. He hath made a decree which shall not pass, that is, shall not be revoked. So the stability of the universe, as we've seen, is a thing to be wondered at and admired. Praise the Lord from the earth, ye dragons and all deeps. So even the prehistoric creatures and the bacteria found several miles down that live without air are not exempt from this majestic show of life. Fire and hail, or maybe lightning and hail, snow and vapor, stormy winds fulfilling his word and carrying out his orders. So the hydrological cycles certainly show evidence of good planning. There's so much in the Bible about the hydrological cycle. You know, Isaiah 55, for example, Ecclesiastes 1, the book of Job talks about the distribution of water on our planet. The ancient people had no idea how that all worked. The Egyptians were completely puzzled about why the Nile River went up and down, you know, during different seasons and so forth. They never did figure it out. But here the Lord reveals it in his word. Mountains and all hills, fruitful trees and all cedars. So here's botany as well as geology. Beasts and all cattle, creeping things, and flying fowl. So here's biology again. I'm reminded of Job 12, 7 and 8, where Job is told, but ask now the beast. You want to figure out what's going on in your life? Talk to the animals, he tells Job. And that's good advice. If you're feeling like God doesn't care about you, then look at what he's done for the animals. We're the pinnacle of God's creation. And he cares for us. Kings of the earth and all people, princes and all the judges of the earth. So this involves, you know, all the leaders of the earth. They're supposed to get in on this praise thing as well, whether it's Joe Biden or Vladimir Putin or, you know, whoever happens to be in charge of Great Britain at this time. All those people are to praise God. Both young men and maidens, old men and children. So here it's equal opportunity for all. There's no ageism, no sexism, no racism. All are obligated to praise God. Let them praise the name of the Lord, for his name alone is excellent. His glory is above the earth and heaven. He hath also exalted the horn of his people, the praise of all his saints, even of the children of Israel, people near unto him. Praise ye the Lord. So the horn is a symbol of the Davidic king, Jesus Christ, through whom the Lord gives victory to his people. And praise stands in for the victory that prompts it. So I can say with the authority of God's word, if you're not praising God for his creation, you don't know the God of creation. Well, we got about 4 minutes. Oh, you have something you want to say? Okay. If there are young people, that are, don't go to the school here. We'll see you if you're in the school, but if they don't go to the school, they're homeschooled or they go public school or whatever. We want to make sure that you're part of our drawing for a t-shirt and all that at the so the table in the back. There's materials there about Bob Jones University, so feel free to get those. Any questions that you have about what we've talked about this morning? I'll try to repeat the question so everybody can hear. Any questions at all? Sunday school, you're supposed to be able to talk to me. Yes. So let's talk about carbon dating. So carbon dating, so carbon 14 is a radioactive isotope of carbon that's formed in the upper atmosphere by the hard radiation from the sun. And so it actually combines with oxygen, and plants absorb it as carbon dioxide, isotopically labeled carbon dioxide. And then one of the great principles of science is that when things die, they stop eating, okay? They stop growing, okay? So the carbon-14 goes back to its original form. And so based on how much carbon-14 that's in there, we can tell how old something is. You know, there's a lot of assumptions in that. But basically, we can see carbon-14 if the organism's less than 100,000 years old, is the idea. We can't see anything beyond 100,000 years. So the first thing carbon dating tells us is nothing can be older than 100,000 years. Okay, so that gets rid of all the millions and billions of years. I'm not saying the Earth is 100,000 years. I'm saying that's the upper limit. Secondly, we find this new carbon, this carbon-14, we find it everywhere. Okay, we find it in deep well carbon dioxide. We find it in coal. It's interesting. Coal all has the same amount of carbon-14 in it, which means that all those trees died at the same time that formed the coal. I know when that was, too. Yeah, there's this guy in the boat, you know, eight people and all that. Yeah, okay. And so we know what happened. And we find carbon-14 in diamonds. All you ladies have diamonds on your rings, in your fingers. All those have carbon-14 in. In fact, there's no source of carbon in the world that doesn't have carbon-14. Okay? And so that shouldn't be the case if the Earth was millions and millions of years old. All that carbon-14 would have reverted back to carbon-12. So carbon-14 is one of the greatest evidences we have for the young age of the Earth. Okay? Hopefully that was a help to you. Anything else? I think we're just about out of time. Yeah, one more minute. Yeah, question, one more minute. Don't ask me a complicated one. You just turned? My wife said I'm out of time. Too late. Okay. If you have some questions, again, put them on a piece of paper, and we'll see if we can get to those this evening. Pastor?